draw of $800, meat raffle, and burger and beer for $30. Thursdays, Fridays, $10 mojitos and pina colada. Saturday, brunch night till 2. And All Blacks Sergeant Team live on the big screen, 7:05. And Sunday, brunch night till 2. We look forward to welcoming you and yours for a great time in Raglan at the Harbourview Hotel.
Starting a landscaping project or just need ideas? Come and see us at Raglan Landscape Supplies. We have all the landscaping products you need, from stones to sleepers, sand to bark, drainage meters to builder's mix, pavers to compost. We even have a plant nursery. We deliver to your door. We have free customer loan trailers. We also hire out a post-hole borer, concrete mixer, compactor and water blaster.
Please check out our website, www.reglandlandscapesupplies.co.nz.
We are at 140 Tomato Road. Look for the big green wheelbarrow or ring 825 0577.
If you have ever thought about volunteering, now is a great time to contact Volunteering Waikato. Their website makes it easier than ever before to find the right opportunity in your town. Get involved in your community, boost your CV, meet new people and learn new skills. For more information, go to volunteeringwaikato.org.nz. Volunteering Waikato, enriching lives.
Good evening, Whangaroa and Raglan. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. Here I'm, Whangaroa, just coming up to 8 minutes past six. And let's have a quick look at what's happening, what the weather's doing and such like. So the weather looks like it's going to be fine, well, cool and fine overnight, going down to 4 degrees, around about 11 at the moment. And we're going to about 12 tomorrow. Maximum over the next few days is going to be 13. We've got showers forecast for Thursday and Friday and Monday. Southwesterly of 10 knots, which has sort of died down a bit. And not much swell either. Southwest wants a swell of 1 metre. And the high tide will be 20 to midnight. 3.2 metre high tide. The next one will be sea, will be just before noon tomorrow, 3 metre high tide. And the days, of course, still getting longer. So 12 minutes past 7 for a sunrise, which is 7 minutes earlier than last week, and 6 minutes later for the sunset than it was last week, so 21 minutes to 6, which means it's fairly dark now. The things on this week: Raglan Ramblers are going rambling tomorrow. I suppose I ought to mention tonight, shouldn't I? So the usual trivia night at Harbourview Hotel, 7 o'clock. Raglan Ramblers going rambling tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Just a local walk from starting at James Street, going round the town, basically. Kaitoki Walkway and things like that. Thursday, Friends of Wainui have got a work morning starting at 9, 3.5 kilometres out of town on the right-hand side. Old school's got a pottery wheel workshop, which is a six-week one, six Thursdays from 7 o'clock on Thursday evenings. $335 for that one. You need to book in for it, of course. And there's also a meeting to talk about the sewage, which the council does every month or two. So this is on 6:30 on Thursday evening. If you want to see the Zoom link to it, have a look at the Whangaroa Environmental Defence Facebook page, and there's a link there. The Repair Cafe is on again on Saturday, 10 till 12 in the Church Hall on Stewart Street. And Sunday, Cora Tayo has got a Nature Connection Family Day. starting 9:30 on Sunday. Need to book in for that one as well, and pay $150 for a family. And there's also the creative market on it being the second Sunday of the month. So it's at the old school on Stewart Street, 10 till 2 on Sunday. And also on Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, the Raglan Roosters are playing football over at Papahua. So if you want to football to watch, 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon. haven't noticed all that much news still. A bit better than last week, I think. But anyway, there's a story in the Waikato Times headed "Erosion Bites into Raglan Airfield. The edge of Raglan airstrip is crumbling into the sea, leaving officials working out how best to manage the erosion. Recent destruction affected about 1.5 metres of the airfield, which is popular with beachgoers. It's also been at the centre of protests and is due to be returned to Māori. The council said in a statement it was exploring options around the best course of action to manage the recent erosion. The district council unanimously agreed to work with government agencies to return it to Māori, but that hasn't happened yet. They say we are still going through the process with the Office for Crown Relations, Te Arawhiti, and other agencies, and said that it... previously they've been discussing the future of the airfield with Ngāti Mahanga and Newton Whānau Trust and Papahua One and Te Kopua Block and Tainui or Tainui. And the 36-hectare block was Māori freehold before an Air Force officer picked it for an emergency airfield back in February 1936. It wasn't actually developed till 1942. The land was declared Crown land in 1969 rather than being given back. And then it was formally given to the Raglan County Council. And in 1971, 2 years later, Māori land rights activist Tuaiwa, Rickard, and the Matakiti Aotearoa movement raised the question of the land going back to its owners. 16 years later, in 1987, Te Kopua No. 4 block was returned to Māori, but the airfield was retained by the district council. So, not sure whether there's anything new there. The airfield's been crumbling into the sea for quite a while now. They've moved successive windsocks. You can see the remains of previous ones on the beach. I'm also going to listen to the mayor, but she has put out a statement saying the council has a tough road ahead when it comes to water services. In the Southland Times article, one of my colleagues, Mayor Brian Cadogan, has expressed a sentiment that has many of my fellow mayors nodding their heads in agreement. I'm a mayor, not a magician, when it comes to identifying and implementing solutions to a challenge of water. The entrenched thinking about how we fund Three Waters, drinking, storm and wastewater will lead us to financial crisis if there isn't a reset. Water allows new jobs and expanded housing, but targeted rates, if unchanged, will be an unbearable financial burden by the end of the decade. We need more treatment plants. We currently have 7. It's also the cost of consenting increasing water standards set by the Water Services Regulator, Tomata Arawai, and we must embrace new technologies, invest in infrastructure and prioritise management. We need new central government to actively work alongside us with alternative funding models and realistic timeframes. It's time for decisive action. After all, it's not just about water. It's about our nation's future. There was a comment from one of the regional council staff saying, Three Waters aim to help councils meet obligations and spread and reduce costs. Unfortunately, the national government scrapped that option and hasn't proposed any alternative except business as usual. And there was a meeting of the Waters Governance Board of the Council this morning. Haven't spotted anything particularly interesting in it, except that there's a public excluded section talking about Raglan wastewater. So we may hear more about that on Thursday at that video meeting that I mentioned. And the only other thing that I've spotted, which I'm trying to keep up with every week, is the rate of COVID cases. And they seem to be coming down, down from 179 last week to 162 this week. And number in hospital, which is probably more meaningful because the number reported is probably way below what the actual number is. Number in hospital down from 26 to 15. And even the number of deaths is slightly down from 7 to 6, that being across the whole of the Waikato. Let's have a look at what else we've got. So if maybe we have the bottom of the hour items, and then it now being 17 minutes past 6, but trying to fit in quite a bit this evening, so then we'll listen to what our mayor's got to say, and then we'll listen to what our councillor's got to say, and then we'll see if we've got any time for anything else, which probably won't, but so here goes.
Over the Fence with Craig Mitch,
Wednesdays at 12:30.
Agriculture, permaculture, horticulture, all the culture. Replayed at Free FM Hamilton and podcast at raglanradio.com.
You can follow us on Facebook by searching for Over the Fence Podcast.
Over the Fence, delving into innovations in the primary sector, biological farming, mental health and more with Craig Mitchell.
12:30 Wednesdays on 98.1.
When in the West, listen to the best, Raglan Community Radio, 98.1.
That finished quicker than I thought it was going to. Here's our mayor for District Council, Jackie Church, talking to Aaron on Thursday, I think it was.
Hey, listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. And on the line, I've got our mayor, Jackie Church. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, listeners.
So we want to talk about, I guess we're going to talk about the Three Waters thing at the moment. Everyone kind of knows the history. There was a lot of fuss around it before the election and around the election, and promises to undo what the previous government had done. And it was quite a while before we found out what the new government wanted to do. And from my perspective, it looks like the costs have been put back on the council, or the councils around the country. Is that kind of how you're seeing it as well?
Yes, absolutely. And actually had a meeting about a month, around field days, so not, you know, time goes on so fast, doesn't it, Aaron?
Yeah.
With Simeon Brown, and just said, you know, really, we really need support of government, because otherwise we're going to end up being what I feel is collateral damage in terms of just government and the waters, perhaps just focusing on the big cities like Auckland and or Hamilton, Tauranga, and Wellington. So, yeah, you know, we really need that support, particularly where we are in the middle of a growth triangle, as we are with the rapid growth on a small ratepayer base around waters.
Yeah, is it harder for our council because we're basically a rural council with about seven or so different little towns everywhere?
Sure, we're probably like really complex. And I guess some good things around it, our council has been on that waters journey for closer to 10 years than five.
Yeah.
And we're really, and obviously brought the communities along, as you say, with Raglan. And that's a good thing because I feel that there's talk of councils around the country that possibly we feel they haven't actually gone very far on that journey in terms of understanding their own infrastructure. And some of them don't even have meters for their water, you know, their fresh water, for example. So we're a long way ahead on the track of understanding our assets and our waters and our implications. We've had a really good contract with Watercare in the past, but we actually are only, of our 90,000 roughly people, we've got about 36,000 ratepayers as a whole who get general rate from our rate, general rated. But there's only about 14,000 of our ratepayers that actually pay for our waters.
Oh, because everybody else is in the country.
Yeah, because we've got obviously that rural and provincial, so they've got a lot of rural or lifestyle blocks where they're doing their own waters. And but we've got, as you said, there's lots of communities that we've got, small towns and hamlets that we've got wastewater treatment plants and our potable drinking water plants And we've got a trickle feed system down around Hamilton as well. So we've got quite complex network of drinking water and wastewater over spread over places, and they're the same size as Auckland Super City. Because Auckland Super City, basically, they've got, what, you know, touching 1.82 million people, most of which are ratepayers to the waters for them, and so they're all contributing, whereas there's only less than half of our people are contributing to those costs. But it's a lot more complex in terms of the so many plants. So, yeah, we know a lot about them. We know the complexities, but we've also been implicated by, you know, the growth.
So
we're ready for growth, but we can't give it. Can't really supply waters to people who really need it.
Yeah. So I'm sort of seeing it like the councils have been left to work together as best they can. But I mean, does Hamilton City want to work with us when they probably view us as a bit of a liability?
Well, yes, in some ways. Yeah. Well, I always reiterate, and I think I believe this. Just like our Raglan or our Waikato District Council is the jewel in our crown, you know, and always will be, in my opinion, okay, and a focus for us, and it's important. Also, Hamilton, for our whole Waikato region, is the mainstay of our region, and I believe as because we boundary them, that there's a good symbiotic relationship between us, and that we should be supportive, and I'm absolutely 100% supportive of our of that relationship, okay, and I think that they have that too, because our future proof works really well in terms of Manamata Piakau, Waipa Hamilton and Waikato District Council working really collaboratively and really upping the ante for the future. But it's a region where we're the growth districts, councils within the big region of the 11 of us. So that's really important to know these relationships. But coming back to the waters, it is complex because, as you say, government has basically said, you guys go and work it out. It's really under your place. Work together, kumbaya, and that. What we've done is our district council, we've probably got five or six different scenarios, all of which we're investigating at the same time, for ourselves personally, and keeping an open and adaptive philosophy about assessing these to make sure that we're open to any opportunities to make the best viable option as we go down the track further. So rather than going, okay, we're going to pick a winner straight up and go down that track, because for us, two things are going on. We had a really good and robust contract with Watercare, but then they've decided to divorce us. So I've actually said to the ministers, it's a 30-year contract. We're 3 years into it. We're just about the stage where we'd actually done a resolution in council to ask them to go to the next stage of the existing contract, which was for them to do the invoicing of waters for us. So as just a process and efficiency status. And the same week that they were sending us divorce papers, was what I call it. Now, I've gone back to government and said, well, you think of me like the Catholic wife, because I don't believe in divorce. And there must be a simple way for us, because we're already aligned with Watercare. The Watercare plants, both their potable drinking water and their wastewater treatment plants in North Waikato, are actually in Tuako. They're actually in our area. Their dams, who supply most of the majority of the water for Auckland, are in the Hunua Ranges, which is in the Waikato, which is in our Waikato District Council. So we have their physical assets. Oh. We've got a 30-year contract. We've had a really fantastic relationship, you know, progressive and working well together. We've got a unique team, almost separate from Watercare, but aligned to them, that works for the Waikato District Council. So tickety-boo, everything's in aligning with another council. Everything's in place. You want us to work with another council, we already are. Our systems and our software are the same. We've upgraded our software to be in line in the grade. So, like, everything is in place, and yet for some reason they don't want us to be separate into Auckland, just to be on their own.
So it's kind of like
the government says one thing, but then they're doing the other.
Who controls Watercare, though? Like, whose decision is that?
Well, Watercare is a CCO of Auckland City Council.
Yep.
It's a council-controlled organisation of Auckland City Council now. And Auckland City Council, you know, it wants to probably focus on themselves, but I've asked the ministers, saying, well, from a strategic point from Aotearoa NZ Inc.,
yep.
When we have to look above, you know, we're 5 million people in the tiny little motus in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. We have to get over these boundary things. What strategically is the best for New Zealand? Now, if they're saying that we should be working together collaboratively in councils, we're saying we're already doing that. We're sharing resources. We're sharing the assets. We've got a contract that's working. And we've got a software that's working. Why don't you just leave that alone? And basically, as government's doing, which, you know, is quite good, they're making big decisions and they're ticking boxes and saying, we'll do it this way, we'll do it that way, whether we like it or not. So, like, tick that box and say, Watercare, please just keep that contract going, at least for the next 2 or 3 or 5 years until this is a bit more unpacked, because that would be
a simple... Are they going to do that? Those the government going to direct Watercare to
well,
do that?
Well, that's what I asked, okay, because that's a simple, a simple short or medium or long-term solution to what... Because if something's already working and not broken, and it's lying, and it also means that, to me, in my head, it was also means that we could then segue into aligning with Hamilton and or Waipa and or Otahonga and using us as a segue into the Waikato so that the amalgamation of the waters could become a bigger CCO over time. As the councils, we're ready to do that, right? Because so we would be that, that's, you know, I guess the red carpet into it. And the other part of it, which is interesting for us and Waikato Tainui, because we're so aligned with Waikato Tainui and their aspirations as well, is that Waikato Tainui's arohi, or the boundaries of it, actually goes right up into where into the Auckland Museum. So okay. We think of our territory boundaries being, say, the top of the Bombay Hills. Their area is into quite well into Auckland. So, again, in terms of mana whenua and waters, we are very aligned on the fact of trying to work together and forgetting about your territorial boundaries is another way of perspective.
But it does feel like the government wants to be hands-off on that issue, though.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, it's not a no until never. I guess of one of these tranches, that's the simplest and easiest. So I've just said to them, look, you know, if you want to help us, that would be a real good help in the short term and medium term, and a simple fix because it's already working, don't break what's not already broken. That's unlikely to happen, but at least it's an option. The other options, as you came back to, is the mayoral forum, all the councils wanting to look with local mana whenua to amalgamate into some form of CCO together. But of course,
so this is for the Waikato area?
Just the Waikato region, correct?
Yeah.
But you've got 11 councils. And to get 11 councils who have got strengths and weaknesses in different areas, strengths and weaknesses of different issues, and to be all aligned at the same time, to amalgamate into a CCO at the same time, is a really big ask. And I think, personally, much as we love central government and you know, any central government's in, a little bit naive for them to expect that we can actually do that. It's more probably a snowball effect where 1, 2, or 3 councils get together and say, yes, we're ready and fit to do it, we can start that. And then there's a snowball effect where others, as they're ready, can then come on to a bigger idea. That would work.
So, Jackie, you're talking about how it will work, and certainly it has to work.
Yes.
But also, one of the reasons the previous government's three waters scheme was set up, which got forgotten about in the co-governance debate, but was that they were trying to create entities that were big enough to raise finance. And Waikato District Council, you were saying before, 90,000 people, the number of ratepayers is a lot smaller. Are we actually big enough to raise that money that we need to go into the future with proper services?
Well, not on our own, and also there's parts of it, why it costs so much. You know, not on our own, but you see, as an example, so Hamilton has more ratepayers, and all of them are paying for towards their waters. But then they have different issues around their debt ceiling, which we don't have the same issues around the debt ceiling.
Yes.
They're not metered, okay, for their waters, where we are metered in waters. So when you come into any partnership, it's a bit like it's hugely complex, okay? How I think of it is like when you're in a relationship with that, like you get in a partnership or get married, you have strengths and weaknesses within those marriages or relationships, and you work to the strengths of each and you support each other with their weaknesses. Right, and so you work through those solutions together as partners, and then to get a better outcome for the greater good. We all know in terms of the numbers from the Crowley report 5 or 6 years ago that amalgamating of 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 entities together gives us a lot of outcomes and lowers the increasing costs of compliance for the betterment. It's also better for the industry, etc. And so we know that works. It's just a matter of who you can partner up with and who you can actually amalgamate with. All of us want to take our waters off our balance sheet so that we can have a revenue raised debt. But at the end of the day, that's part of it. But raising debt means we've all still got to pay for it. It just means you pay for it over a longer period of time. And so it's a lower cost per year. But probably at the end of it, just like any mortgage, you actually pay a lot, just like any mortgage. Right, you pay it off early, you pay less.
Pay
over a long
time,
it's more affordable. The other thing that comes into these waters, though, for us particularly, is that because we've got so many plans, the level of compliance, because when you've got a consent, it's 10 years or 15 years. When they're rolling over, we've got, I think, two or three or four consents that are rolling over within a 10-year period. Now, what happens with that is that as we've all aspired to have higher levels for the environment, the compliance cost of the new consents is huge. So it's like an exponential cost increase to upgrade the wastewater and potable water treatment plants to the new specifications. So, again, these are things like to be in compliance costs you twice as much money. Now, we want healthy waters, and we've got healthy waters, but if the standards get getting higher and higher, that just costs more money, okay? And how much affordability have we got? So it's about balancing what do the rules say, what do we need under 2
Yeah, that's all right.
Waters, okay, so that's part of the problem. It's not just about waters in our small ratepayer base.
So,
it's
Jackie,
also about the compliance costs.
Can I ask, I know that one council, I think Whakatane District Council, said they literally won't be able to afford to meet compliance in years to come. Are the councils, the mayors and councils, is there any chance that they're going to rebel en masse against the government instruction? Can they even do that?
Yeah, good question. We've actually discussed it. We've had that similar discussion and questions asked because, we're looking at all options, right? And one of the councils brought up, what if we don't not compliant or we refuse to be compliant? But actually, just come back a step. We get an independent, councils get an independent assessment of our financial status. And we're quite pleased that we've actually kept our AAA status for our financial status for our council. So we actually do good governance and good financial management of our district council. Not everybody, when they have that independent assessment, have kept those high ratings for credit. And why I'm saying that to you is showing that what we try to do is good governance. Good governance included we as the local government should follow and must follow the laws of the land, which are set by central government. Basically, in brackets, whether we like it or not.
Right.
We can try and advise them and support them with better outcomes and help them to scope better decision making, right? Which is also what I'm really heavily into. Let's try and help them to make better decisions based on practical expertise that we've got into that. But to go against them is not something that we would mandate. And also, at the end of the day, when you're seen in different councils for different reasons, Tauranga would be an example, Kaipara would be another. When local government doesn't do what they're supposed to do and what they're mandated to do, then commissions can be brought in.
They get fired, yes. Yeah, you would get fired with all the councils. Yeah, okay, all right. Well, that's that picture there. I want to move over just to a little bit about growth in Raglan and things like that. And I want to just give you a little story here, which is kind of a microcosm of how we feel in Raglan. One of our guys, John, has been talking to Future Proof about it's just an example, a corridor study on State Highway 23, and it's a relatively dangerous road, and we're due a lot of population growth, and they've basically come back and said, we've got much bigger population growth in the north of the district to worry about, so we're not doing anything about Raglan. And our feeling is that while we are a smaller population overall, the growth rate here is quite substantial, and we've got, I'm looking at plans for about 1,000 new sections to come online. And this is, so that's what, 2,500 people in a town that's currently 3,000 to 4,000 people. So we are looking at quite explosive growth. Now, you're not particularly in charge of Future Proof, but we are wanting something like a structure plan or some kind of plan. I know council has different types of plans they can do. And we feel like we're too far down on the list that towns which are not growing as much as us are ahead of us. And we would like to know that maybe in the next year's LTP that there's going to be money there for Raglan to do some serious planning, because we have some, as a percentage, we have some serious growth coming up on our community.
And I guess yes, I agree. I guess what you brought up is quite a few different topics, so I'm going to unpack a couple of things. I guess
for sure.
We're in an economic downturn, and I've actually changed one of our committees from strategy and finance to performance and strategy. Why I'm telling you that, then, listeners, is because I believe that our organisation, like any other, whether it's a business or a corporate, we've got slightly different legislative processes, but we still run as a business with high revenue input and output. And so the performance is understanding the environment of the economics, right? Now, so things like affordability come up, so we can have whatever we like, as long as us as ratepayers want to pay for it. Mm. But when we've got limited... what I'm trying to do and make sure is, and we're really focusing on this internally, is making sure the organisation is a lot more fit and healthy and also future-proof for the future, which is dynamic and complex and changing more rapidly in the future, AI, all the rest of it. This comes back to now, in the moment, we're in an economic downturn. However, we're going into potentially an upside of growth, right? Mm. And so the government's, even things now, the changing of inflation. So this comes down to, we can have structure plans or plans specific to all of our towns that are all experiencing that growth. as much as we like. If we want to throw more consultants at it and throw more planners at it and have more capacity and charge you with the rates. So the performance is important overall for our whole district. Just to manage, I personally believe in what's happened in the past with when we've had economic downturns, is the Waikato region as a whole in our district, we go into the slumps slower, we don't go in so deep, and we come out faster. Mm. Now, I'm trying to make sure that we track our performance as a whole district to make sure, one, that we have equity of managing and also good empirical information to base our decisions rather than the loudest voices or the, you know, ad hoc decision-making. We need to look at empirical information and what we've done, what we're going in the future and what's likely to occur so we can make the best decisions for all and have equity. And you're right, because we are in the middle of where we're all having growth across the whole district, and sometimes in places that we didn't plan growth, like anyway, we're being example with Sleepyhead, there's planned and unplanned. Raglan, obviously, you say it's also the housing that's going to be there now, which are probably about 30-40% is likely on today's stats to be non-occupier, right? Because there might be those people buy homes, but they might not necessarily live there all the time, because that's the stats at the moment. For Raglan,
for sure.
Yeah, right. So you've got different things, but you are growing. But then Telfer is growing. The north is growing, Te Kawhata is growing, and around Tawhiri, Tamahiri, Manatangi, that's another area that's growing at the same time, let alone some of our rural areas. So you're right, absolutely, we do need, because of the uniqueness of not just your growth, but also the fact that you're slam dunked in seasonality as well, we have to make sure that you're supported in terms of good planning. Some places, for example, Pokeno's at about 5,000 people now, roughly.
I know their growth is way bigger than ours,
they don't haven't actually had a structured plan at all. So then, like Raglan, they've had some planning done, which is good, but they do need some bespoke planning done. Like we've done some roading planning for around your spatial planning, and also guidelines for extending your main street.
So can I just leap in, Jackie, because Pokeno didn't have a structured plan, but they had I don't know the name of the plan, but they have had a plan about how they're going to rebuild their town centre, and which is being put into practice at the moment. I just don't know it's just not called a structure plan.
No, they had a basic pulling together of the existing planned budget that was done in 3 weeks with two people from the community, and it didn't go out as a public document. And so they were just pulling together some of the infrastructure that was planned into a cohesive document. It wasn't actually like anything that went through in terms of an economic, social well-being or a roading plan. It's got a bit of pieces all over the place to try and bring it to one place. But yeah, that's just an example. But like at the moment, like Taupuri and Taupuri, Narawahia, Hopuhopu, who've got that structure plan happening, there's a rollout of a different sort of plan for Huntly that also hasn't had a plan done. But this is more a socio-economic and well-being one because of just the specific needs of that area. And coming back to Raglan, it definitely will be supported. I think it's important that you've looked at and supported for the right planning, whatever it is. Let's call it structured planning, but it may not be able to be a bespoke version of what planning is needed for you at the time. And as you say, but there's also other places that need those things as well. It'll be a matter of prioritising it. And I think at the moment the thinking is for the RTP is it's not just like one person, then one, and then the next one. We'll probably try and do a couple at the same time because there'll be different bespoke versions of those things. Mm. Because at the moment, because we're gearing up for that growth, even though we might be in an economic downturn, I believe strongly as a mayor that we have to be absolutely, because to me the avalanche of growth is coming like an avalanche, like a big wave.
And a little bit of
economic downturn is going to affect particularly Raglan in a significant way. So we need to make sure that with this relatively quiet time, even though it's hard to find the money to do it and the resources, we need to be absolutely planning that they're ready for managing that growth in a good, productive way for the better outcomes of places like Raglan and those other communities.
So can we say it's, like when you do their next LTP, that'll be looking, definitely spending 3 years ahead. Will we be in that, do you think?
Well, I can't guarantee anything because, there's got to go through. I only get one vote.
Of course,
And we will, I guess the thing is, council's well aware, and I love this about you and Raglan, is you're very good at advocating for yourself and you're very well aware of your strategic view for forward, which is great because a lot of our communities need more of that acumen and we're trying to build up that resilience in them as well, right? So that's a great thing about you. So we're always clear about your needs and wants. But what we also need to do is balance that with those other paces and to kind of go, how can we manage what needs to happen and over which years, okay? But this year now, we're going to be working on, for this next 12 months, the next 2 years of the LTP, year two and year three, and then obviously into year four. And just going back to what you said about the stats, that you've got by 2050, you'll have another 1,000 homes. And you
will have a lot by then. By then, we'll probably have more than that.
I think the rate they're selling at the moment,
I think they'll sell faster than that.
Yeah, and even if it's less, so even by 2030. So I know in Te Kauwhata and in the north, same sort of thing, or even Taupiri, same thing. Those stats are happening faster than we thought. We're actually all over our district, we're above the fastest growing tracking line of population. So yes, it's top of mind, but also there's other areas. So this is just a matter of looking at them, assessing them, and then going, what can be done under the resources that council's got at the moment, and what comes first and second. But it doesn't mean it's not happening. And also what's coming out is also more stats from the Stats Department, which by the end of this year, where they're just getting the top-of-the-line stuff now, is by the end of the year, that information will actually help us with that information. So it's not like you're the poor cousin. And actually, if you look at some of the big infrastructure projects that have happened around Raglan and the planning to improve the way of life in terms of walkways, walk environment, Main Street, wastewater treatment plant work that's still continuing, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of infrastructure, time and resources of council's gone into Raglan, and then, you know, even the public transport. So definitely, as I said, you're the jewel in the crown. You have really unique needs and wants. You've got high growth as well as the tourism. So absolutely, those things are taken into consideration when we figure out who needs what where.
Okay. All right, let's move on to something else I want to talk about. I've got another little story I need to tell you that kind of illustrates the thing I want to talk about. And it just relates to a little bit of erosion across the walk bridge in Papahua here in Raglan. And we had in 2010, 2012, around that area, the bridge was changed and it removed. It effectively was the foot of the bridge was acting like a groin. And so in 2010, an engineer told regional council, so it's not you guys, that there would be no problems, but a local scientist here who's an expert in this kind of thing said, no, this is going to be a problem. And he was talking to the people at regional council at the time, but the person he was talking to, they got sick, and I think in the end they died. So that's a little bit sad. So 5 years later, the same scientist is recommending to a local organisation that we need to do something about it, and so they were getting in touch with... I'll just summarise it. I've got a series of communications with people in the community to staff at Waikato District Council, some of whom I know and were very competent people, but they kept leaving. And so this is an issue that's still going today, and we're getting more and more of the inlet area eroded, where it's getting closer and closer to the road where the soccer fields are. And every time someone in the community tries to do something about it, they get in touch with someone at council, and then that person leaves the council. So what I want to talk about is staff turnover and the fact that, because that's a waste of our ratepayers' money, and also, you know, it's not good. We're looking at a new CEO sometime in the future. Can we? And I know this is just me making a suggestion to you, and you're the mayor, and you make the decisions. But can we create a culture in the council where people like working there and just want to stay? Because I know there's competition from other councils. Can we have a CEO who has a new vision? Because typically what would happen is they'll come in and a new CEO will do a restructure about how the power flows. But can we make it a place that people love to work and they just want to stay? Is that a possibility?
Okay, lots of things unpacked. I actually read a couple of things around your bridge and the groin and the groins and the your expert this morning. Just you know, prepping for you, talking to you, Aaron, because I try. You know, I won't know everything in detail, but I am absolutely focused and interested in everywhere. But you know, you are important to us, and so you're really important to me, right? And I read that article around the groins and the bridge and the erosion. And I've actually put it into my file to go and talk to staff to go, look, this has been going on for, like, as you said, quite a few years, regional council and district council, and then there's this erosion effect of the pylons, and what are we, you know, what's happening with that project? So I glanced through it. I read that guy's name, which has gone right out of my head.
Shaw Mead is a scientist.
But in the groins and the bridge, okay? So,
yes.
So I put that in my diary.
Cool,
now,
that's nice.
Because I just read that. So I thought that was really interesting. Interesting that and where that project's at. Okay, that's part of it. In terms of like what we're trying to do in council is, and let's call it, I call it every time since I've been here, it's probably my 12th year there now, is the intellectual property. The capture of intellectual property of any organisation as people turn over is key, all right? And so we're doing a lot of work and have been doing a work for a couple of years now around making sure that we capture that intellectual property. So part of it is, what if that's a project, where is it at, who's running it, if someone leaves, who picks it up? and how is it carried forward so that everybody, whether it's you or any other 50,000 projects that we have going on and queries, how do we make sure that they're progressed? Or, hey, we can't progress this for another year. We've got to put it aside. There's a clear timeline or a clear understanding by both sides as to where they're at, right? And so that's a really good example to ask those questions, to see how far we got on that sort of work. So one, absolutely, the dynamics of that particular project, we need to go, who's looking after that and where is it at and what's the next step forward? Part of that is that we've got now we've actually had our first meeting, is a district-wide resilience working group, which is regional council, district council.
Yep.
I've suggested strongly, and I think we put that in the terms of reference, that, and it's in Waikato Tainui than that, as a governance group for the whole of the district to oversee the different climate change effects, both Port Waikato, Raglan, but other areas as well that are happening now and will happen in the future. But I've suggested strongly that also that we should have a local representative for a local hapu or representative of each of those areas, as well as a local governance one. So, like, particularly as Port Waikato and Raglan, for example, at the moment, have got community boards. So I'm pretty sure that our terms of reference just discussed this week, that there will be part of it, so that when we have a governance group around these resilience, so these little projects can be brought up within the issues around Raglan, around whether it's airfield erosion, whether it's there, or whether it's at Manu Bay, or whether it's out in the harbour, and how these things around the erosion, and start to tracking it, making sure we've got to put some cameras up to, which has happened at the port, just got to look at it over time, and so the extent and things like that. So this, I believe that these things will be picked up within that governance group as operational matters to be highlighted.
Mm.
There's a process in there. In terms of the turnover of staff, our Waikato District Council staff, and COVID's that weird blow for everybody, pluses and minuses. Local government runs at about 17 to 18% turnover on average nationally, and we're roughly the same. I think we might have blipped up at 20% at one stage, but probably the same around COVID, same with everyone else. Our turnover of staff hasn't been any bigger or less than anyone else, but sometimes if people are dealing with particular people, they feel like they've lost that in that particular area, and this is why it's important, things like water space particularly, which is what you're talking about, or resilience, that we make sure that we've got that continuity. So there's quite a lot of place, but this also comes back to if someone does leave for whatever reason, or maternity leave, or they go overseas, not necessarily because they don't like the place, we haven't got a good culture. Lots of reasons why people leave, or they want to get ahead somewhere, all sorts of things, or their partner leaves and goes and gets a job somewhere else. Lots of reasons people leave, is that we make sure that those projects are picked up. So that comes back to that thing, is where is that project at, and how do we progress it in a timely way? And if we don't have the resources to do it, and then we have to prioritise the priorities of the projects of Raglan, that your community board are well aware of what that priority is, and so that everyone's clear, right? Because we can't do everything for everybody across the whole district in a fair and equitable way unless we throw a hell of a lot more resources and stuff, right? And it's particularly if we're really trying to make sure that we don't have overuse of too many more people and don't spend too much more money because we're in a cost of living crisis. We have to prioritise those things. But everyone's clear about those things, and then we can make sure we haven't forgotten them, but we make sure that everyone's clear about the communication. That's, I think, a more adult way of doing it. That's the sort of stuff that we're working on. So that's in terms of the chief executive. We've actually this week also just had on, was public excluded, so I can't really go into much detail, but I asked as a mayor, going back to the internal mechanisms of our council, that we give an overview to our councillors of how operationally our council works, the project that the IT have been doing, a little bit of touching on how does, AI might impact our business in the future. And just like, because we always talk about towns or outcomes or projects or capital, we don't actually talk about the mechanics of the business that actually makes these things happen. We had a big overview in that. We also talked about the staffing levels. And actually, how I understand it is actually our staff and the culture is actually really above the average of nationally. And this is the feedback from staff back into a survey.
Okay.
Because we track that also. So the culture, we're really strong in building strong culture that gives people flexibility but gives them a sense of belonging, but also asking them to spread their wings in terms of their acumen and their expertise and make that collective bigger than their jobs and to look for things that they can do better. Our council sort of raised our risk level a little bit. I mean, I'm saying if we had a risk appetite of 4, we might have raised it to 4.5. But we're showing that although we're not risky, because that's not our job to be risky like an entrepreneur, we do want to look at trialing things and looking outside the square and saying, how can we do things better, faster, more efficiently? And you have to therefore think outside the square. And that's kind of like an idea of risk. So there's lots of pieces that are moving towards staff feeling more self-actualised, feeling like they're part of a bigger picture, us making ourselves future-proof for it, realising we're already complex and our society's complex, and we will have to be more adaptive and vigilant to that complexity, and that's what we're doing at the same time. So I think the staff at the moment are feeling really good, and we've had a lot of, you know, having a lot more diversity of staff, which has also been one of our key focuses, because diversity, whether it's cultural, age, culture, ethnicity, faith, or, you know, and acumen, helps to us in better decision making. We know that, and so that's been a really good positive thing that's happening as well.
Okay, all right. Now there was just one other thing I wanted to add. I relates to the growth issue. I just ran into people from the kids soccer club yesterday at an event I was at, and this is just an example of growth. 5 years ago they had 200 kids. Now this year they've got 290 kids playing soccer. So that's an example of the big growth. I think it's already happening, because we're talking about future, but it's already happening. And they're a particular club. They don't have their own. They have fields they play on, but it's not a dedicated place. And there's all sorts of issues around there. So I think they were keen that you would hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, there's a couple of things on that. It's kind of like I'm really pleased with the work. I've been to like 3 or 4 in this last year, which, I love going to things where we actually make stuff happen. We do a lot of talking and planning, but when we actually make stuff happen and actually turn the lights on. But coming out play fields, what we've done is, like, it's expensive to buy more playing fields, right, and to run them. But if we put lights on them, which is quite expensive, I mean, it's $500,000 I think we spent at Patterson Park in Narawaya for $450,000. But by putting lights on and then putting really good electrics in, which means that, like, a band can come and play in the middle of the day there, we actually doubled the capacity, you know, because then they can go into, like, 10 o'clock at night kind of idea. And so that's the way of using smart money. So in terms of the Raglan, just say, like, this sort of thing, we're great that we're getting our children into sport, but then are we making sure that in Raglan as well that we've got lights on all the fields so that we get better capacity out of them? Because that would be smart use of the money to do that. The other thing I noticed that's happening across the district is, I'd say this with love to all the rugby union fans out there, like my husband, but rugby league is like the bomb, and soccer. And there seems to be a real move away from the union in our district that I've seen towards soccer and, which I think people call it football, is it? And league.
Some prefer now, that,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so I guess the question would be, in Raglan, is there the fact that there's more people playing those three sports that would be played on the same field, and therefore it's an issue of more capacity, so there's a 50% increase overall? Or is there a movement away from what was traditionally that might have played 5 years ago to another, so that the numbers haven't necessarily changed?
Definitely overall the numbers have increased across the kids for
Have they increased? Yeah, but so what you're saying is, like, there's a 50% increase in the youth in soccer, but has there been a 30% decrease in this or that, you know?
Not for Raglan, for the rugby. There's, like, in the you mentioned the league. The league is actually exploding here at the moment, so.
Exactly, yeah. Same with rugby, yeah. But and where's the rugby union? Because another year the rugby union's a lot quieter, but the other's got. So, yeah, absolutely, that growth. So have we got a capacity issue on our fields? Do we need to look at buying more fields or not? Or can we make better utilisation with them by putting lights on them? Those are the sorts of things that the outdoor space is looking at all the time. Yeah. There's another piece of work that fits into that, where we can't keep going and buying more land. One, that's not necessarily available, and two, we can't afford it. We can't pay, you know, premium prices because we're ratepayer money, right? We're not like a developer who's got maybe a bit more money that they can spend on these things. So it's hard to find land in the first place that's suitable and the price that we can afford, let alone affordability and LTP. But we've got, I think, about 1,600 or 1,800 pieces of land that the Waikato District Council manages. And what we've got, this is a strategic piece. We're probably about three quarters of the way through it, the property department, to analyse these pieces of land, which is a huge ask, to say that we can see over the whole district what are strategic pieces of land that we want and we've got and we want to keep. What are pieces that we don't need absolutely and we want to sell? Because if we can sell stuff, then we can then add to the income to buy things that we want to do. And what pieces are missing, right, of that strategic, which comes back to what you say, is maybe we need some support, both from Sport Waikato around supporting that amazing club with their growth with the kids and how to manage them on a day-to-day basis, but also other resources in the open spaces, whether it's fields or equipment.
We do have
help them in those areas as well.
We do have land out here in the form of the Wainui Reserve, which has been looked at. So,
yeah,
for that specific issue,
and also, and then, like, and then if you can put lights on, that's good. So they're actually the good things, and I'm sure, and I think, you know, like, I know that your community board are really focused on this sort of stuff and have a really good message with the council, a good relationship with us, let alone or your club. So open spaces are open to finding out what's going on, bringing in other people and community facilities people and or people like sport to make sure what's happening, they can be supported with that growth. But also this piece of work around the strategic use of all of our property, whether we can buy and sell, let go, we may have more income if we need to in the future, because we do, as you say, future-proof Raglan like everywhere else for where do we next maybe need fields or whatever, right? Or what is the next big thing that's going to cost millions of dollars that Raglan will need and overall other places as well, so that we're actually not behind the eight ball in terms of the right infrastructure fit for purpose for thriving communities.
Well, look, Jackie, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. I've got another interview about to start, and I'm sure you've got more important things to do than talking to me. So I'll let you go now, and I just want to thank you for your time this morning and for being available for us.
Yeah, no, same here. Thank you so much for your time.
Hi, Raglan, Wayne, Super Values. Come in and check out our great specials with over 1,000 every week. If you are a gold card holder, every second Tuesday is for you. Present your card and receive an instant 5% discount on your purchases, including all existing specials. Our community cash grants are available to all local clubs and organisations. Our New Zealand Post and Kiwibank staff are here to help. We look forward to seeing you in store and being part of this great Raglan community.
Tired of shivering through winter or sweltering in that summer heat? Stendi Electrical is here to help with our top-notch heat pumps. Our team of experts is fully licensed and trained to install the latest energy-efficient heat pumps in your home or business. And if you don't know which heat pump is best for you, we can give you a free quote. We also provide servicing to ensure they're always running at peak performance. So don't wait until the next heatwave or cold snap. Call us now for a free quote. 825-0214.
Looking for a conference room for your next get-together? Raglan Holiday Park's Hui Room is a modern facility that caters for up to 35 people. And with large screen, bathroom facilities and a full kitchen, it's perfect for team building, meetings, events and more. The Hui Room is only a few metres from the beach, which is great for extra activities, and accommodation is available for anyone coming from out of town. We do great discounted rates for locals too, so give us a call on 825 8283 today.
Raglan Community Radio supports the Code of Broadcasting Practice for the broadcasts of its radio programs. If you hear something you find offensive or intentionally misleading on our station, you have the right to complain. A formal complaint about a specific program or incident must be made within 20 days of broadcast of that program to Raglan Community Radio, PO Box 126, Raglan.
You're listening to Irirangi o Whangaro, official station of the Maui Dolphin.
It's just coming up to 7 o'clock. And let's listen to another of our councillors, our local councillor, Whangaroa councillor, Lisa Thompson, talking to Aaron the day after he talked to the mayor.
Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. And in our studio, I've got a councillor, Lisa Thompson. Good morning, Lisa.
Morning, Aaron. And what a beautiful morning in Whangaroa.
I'm quite surprised. There's a bit of a chilly easterly out there.
It was quite chilly. I left. It's just a lovely way to connect with the environment and the community as well.
Did you come in across the walk bridge and through the new path on when?
I did.
What's called the Wenera Walkway now?
Yeah, I did, and it's fantastic. So it's going to be great when it's finished, because I was a bit sceptical about, you know, widening it and all of that, and it was all right. But actually, it's really comfortable when you meet groups of people. It's comfortable walking past. It feels less precarious than what it did when I had small children, and that, you know, if you pass groups of people, you felt you might end up floating out to...
Well, I remember someone, when our kids were preschool age, someone else's preschool child did fall down the side.
Some people had.
Petition, but at that point people were like, oh, we don't need that, it's regular.
Yeah.
But now there's a lot more people walking.
There is a lot more people walking, so it feels lovely to have to actually have that wideness. So, yeah, they've done a great job. And, of course, I walk past the roading upgrade that they're undertaking at Papahua.
So that started now, has it?
So that actually started over a week ago. So that's looking good as well, just widening of that and doing up that sort of work. So there seems to be lots going on And so, I actually just saw some of the staff in the garden where the parklet is, just outside of the kebab shop.
Yes.
They're putting in new plants and things like that.
Oh, doing
that.
Some gardening.
Okay. Yeah, doing some gardening in there. So certainly there seems to be a lot going on.
So while you've mentioned Papahua, and I was talking with the mayor about this yesterday, although I used it as an example of something. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that backstory. The erosion. So we've got erosion happening on two sides of Papahua. There's the ocean side, and then there's the inlet side. And we know the inlet side has been created by the loss of what was effectively a groin with the old bridge. And I think that's certainly an issue to Ngāti Mahanga and also to the campground board and the soccer fields and a lot of us.
That's right, yeah. Aaron. And you know, I guess that we have to look at a number of factors when we're considering what we will do in that area. And, you know, council is really looking at the retreat for areas that are low-lying, like...
But we're about to rebuild the road. Right,
but, you know, that's for... We needed to do work on that as well. It's a high-use area, and if we're looking at the next 30 to 50 to 100 years, that's going to take more forward planning about what that looks like for that area particularly. Excuse me. And so on Monday... next week, the Holiday Park Governance Board and staff, we've got our strategic planning hui that we will be doing on Monday, and part of that is actually looking at mitigation for the erosion in areas, and particularly from a hapu perspective, nearer where the urupara is, where Te Awaitaia and others are buried. So looking at options for that area and what that might be. And the area on the seaward side by the airfield, that we're in an erosion phase. And if one just looks at the recent article from the Kōkiri with the removal of the stage, not the removal, but the uplifting and placement of the stage that was nearer the erosion area. It's a dynamic environment, and over time, if one were to look at the aerial photos that have been taken, I think since the early 1940s, those areas come and go. And I know that because we're humans, we get concerned about the areas that we have use of, but Mother Nature and Tangaroa have that relationship of the moving sands and the moving environment. So right now, you know, and I think Coast Care put up that lovely short film that they've done around erosion phases. So we have to be really cognizant of that and the decisions that we make about whatever we put in to that landscape.
Well, if it
and
is,
we will
if it
need
is...
to speak with the owners of that area and look at what those options are. And that, you know, from the council perspective, it does come at a cost to the ratepayers as well.
Who are the owners technically right now?
I'm not going to say that.
In process, right?
It's still in process. With district council.
Right, okay.
So it's still under district council, but we have made a decision in council around the coastal erosion about retreat, because we know we just have to look up at Port Waikato. And I'm sure Jackie Church touched on that when you interviewed her the other day, that, you know, at Port Waikato, we had our first governance board hui with regard to erosion on Monday. We've seen significant erosion activity at Port Waikato. And that, again, comes and goes, you know, depending on what's happening and how much sand is coming backwards and forwards.
I imagine, because that's the open coast there, it's a lot more vigorous.
It's really vigorous. And, you know, locals who've lived there for a long time haven't seen such vigorous displays of erosion. But I think also... it's combined, I think, you know, where people are quite shocked in some ways because the popularity of areas are used by more people. So I guess when people are using a place and it's closed, for example, the car park, they're quite shocked by that. But it is a reality of living in a coastal community is the dynamic of that changing environment. And sometimes we have to think about the human use of that area, but also just the natural cycles that are undertaken and are exacerbated by the effects of climate change as well.
And human use. And one thing I thought about, because Papahua is a sandbank, and with the way that plants work on sandbanks, it's actually the sort of thing that could continue to keep rising with the sea level because of sand being blown into it, except for the fact that it's no longer a sandbank because we've turned it into sports fields and a campground and an airfield. So it can't really build back up in quite the same way as it used to, which is... That's just kind of occurred to me recently. It's not a very helpful thought, but it's just kind of there.
Well, it's good. We must have those discussions and planning now. You know, we're probably 10 years late in terms of that ability for thinking about it, but at least we're starting now. We should have probably looked at it 10 years ago, you know, in terms of what actions we could take, and it might have been easier to put in groins and things like that at that time, as opposed to now. You know,
although all the experts are saying the groin is a thing, but seawalls don't necessarily work that well.
That's right.
I think people think there's a seawall near the changing sheds over at Papahua, and people think that worked because the sand is all in front of it. But I think the sand's all in front of it because of the groin effect of the old bridge.
Yeah, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know the ins and outs.
I've had people on saying that walls are. Very counterproductive.
And I also think that some people I noticed on the post on the notice board, someone had posted Aotea has worked it out, you know, and they've got big rocks along their waterfront. But again, it's probably a different dynamic. So in terms of
that's not working it out. That's replacing your beach with rocks.
So
I don't consider that working it out, especially if the sand is eventually going to come back in maybe 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, or go further, as happens.
And undermine the rocks.
Yeah, so, you know, so there's a lot to be considered in terms of what we can and can't do realistically.
Yeah, getting that message out there that it's a natural cycle is the hard one, because I think people feel under attack. They feel like the sea's trying to take over the land. And I felt like that until I had this interview with
Angela. But it's a natural process as well.
Stacey from Coast Care and Angeline Green, so we had a big conversation about it here in the studio, and I got to the understanding that, yeah, it will eat away and then it will come back and, it'll move.
Yeah, it comes and goes, and that's the dynamic environment. And I think we forget that because as humans we want our environment to bend to our will so we can
As modern humans,
if you probably looked at a hapu perspective, there were different places where people lived or congregated depending on the time of year and for what purpose, if it was for kai gathering or whatever, you know. So it wasn't like we have now a permanent home in one spot. It was, in a way, I suppose, fluid, depending on the seasons.
Yeah, and the homes were not so intensive and so big and hard to move.
Yeah,
it was a very
so it'll be a challenge for us moving forward, you know, particularly as coastal people.
Yeah, so civil defence, let's just change a different topic. Although it's kind of related.
It is. It's absolutely related. So
Resilience planning. Is what
resilience planning. So you know that Dennis and I are working on our plan, and we touched on that. Chris, the community board has seen the plan, and Chris Rayner said it was a very good one. So I met with Gabriel Parson from Raglan Naturally, and we're working on. Getting messaging out to the community, for example, in the Chronicle. Are you prepared? This is what preparedness looks like for a household of blah, blah, blah. You know, make sure you've got X, Y, and Z. And then Scott, who's from our staff, we've got a house plan. So we'll be going out to the community shortly with, opportunities to work on what resilience looks like in your whare. Say if the power went out, what do you need if there was flooding? So we're going to be doing that very shortly. So we're doing some planning around that and the messaging in the Chronicle. And I was fortunate enough to catch up with one of the Time Bank people last week, last Friday actually, to have a kōrero about how TimeBank could possibly be involved. So Tanya Ashman has put her hand up to be involved in the in some of the activities, and so came up with an idea of a prepared cafe as opposed to a repair cafe. Yeah. So having an opportunity for the community to come along to look like what preparedness looks like for a household or for a person or a family of four, so they can see what that looks like. And we've yet to think about do we have examples. Like for my house, I already have heaps of stuff, candles and things like that, so bringing along what preparedness looks like for me and my whare, and what others can do without spending a lot of money. So, you know, we should really be prepared for 3 days to be self-sufficient, and also getting to know your neighbours. So importance for urban and rural areas to know who your neighbours are, who might be vulnerable, who might need support, checking in and sharing resources. You know, because in my household, we've got a generator so we can hook that up. We've got a barbecue, all of those sorts of things. We've got a gas hob.
Fireplace?
No, haven't got a fireplace.
We've
actually
got a fireplace, which is very handy when we had the power cut.
Yeah, but my partner said, what's stopping us from having a little fire outside anyway?
You might do that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in a brazier or something, but we don't have, our house is only small anyway, you know, so, you know, so doing the, are you prepared cafes? So rolling out all of that. So it's not just on civil defence on that community plan, but building in, should something happen, that we're prepared as a community and people can take care of them themselves for a minimum of 3 days.
I think we need to do some messaging on the radio as well, since we would be broadcasting during an emergency.
Well, I'll share with you, because actually what was brought up by the woman that I met from the Time Bank was around where could people go to get updates, even if it was just powers out.
That was a problem with the power cut. I ran into people downtown wandering around going, what's happening?
Yeah, so it was suggested, could it be at Raglan Radio? And it said, well, that's if Raglan Radio is operating. You know,
depends on the emergency, we might be somewhere else.
Yeah, you might be somewhere else. So, but it's a good point. So, you know, who would be responsible for having a whiteboard or something out somewhere, if it's the Raglan Club or Raglan Radio? You know, so that's something that community response group, you know, can think about, those sorts of comms. It may not be a civil defence emergency. It may not be a state of emergency like the power outage, but people want some comfort, and it might simply be power outage time that we're getting back unknown. Watch the space for further information. You know, just so then people are aware, and that one place of truth, as opposed to perhaps online spaces that everyone has an opinion and conflicting views.
That power cut day, Mike from the community house came in to see me in the afternoon. He said, "I've heard three different times that the power's coming back on. What have you heard?"
Yeah. So you were so great. Raglan Radio was so fantastic with staying up to date and, I guess, advocating and getting into the ear of the power provider. But as I said when I was having a discussion about resilience, you know, the providers may not know, because they are under the pump doing the mahi, trying to work out what is wrong and what are the timeframes. So there's that. There will probably be a time where it's a vacuum.
And we had the issue with them that they didn't want to say anything until they were sure about what they were saying.
Yeah.
And so it took 6 hours before we heard from Well Networks. And next time, if we have that happen again, I'll actually put more pressure on them and say, it's okay to say that you don't know everything yet.
Yeah.
But you can tell people, oh, we've got 60 people out there working on it. We're doing this.
Yeah.
At least they feel cared for.
Yeah. And that they're being heard, you know, because people, and rightly so, are apprehensive and frightened in some instances. But I think there's that opportunity to lessen that anxiety is making sure that people are prepared as much as they can be to be self-sufficient, whatever that might look like for your household.
And you just mentioned the preparedness group. Is the group still looking for volunteers to be part of the structure of that, like when there's an emergency, people have jobs, certain few people have jobs to do?
Yes, and we'll be doing a call out for that. Dennis is leading that. So we'll be doing a call out for people who are keen to be involved, and that'll be really important roles. And then, of course, there'll be opportunities for people to be involved if we need to get, say, for example, I don't know, getting water out to people, for example, you know, if they haven't got transport or things like that. So we'll be coordinating those sorts of things. So just watch this space. But we will be putting messages out in the Chronicle. Are you prepared? Information what that looks like as well. In line with, in partnership with Raglan, naturally.
Okay. Was there any discussion about Sound Splash during the meeting?
I didn't. I wasn't at the public forum. We will be having a discussion about that, but we didn't on Wednesday.
Okay. I know there were people there who were, because I wasn't there. People are wondering
why I wasn't
there.
I didn't get there till 2 o'clock, actually.
So you weren't there at the start. I wasn't there at all. John Lawson wasn't there at all. My usual sources of information are out. But I did know that there were three groups applying for some of the discretionary fund, and if you totaled up everything they wanted, it was going to use up most of the discretionary fund, so I'm going to hazard a guess they didn't get they didn't get much of what they wanted.
Yeah, because Ross Wallace, who's been doing a fantastic job, he's our funding representative on the community board, so he's been putting a lot of thought into how can we push those funds out, and really more for seeding funding for the community, because we don't have a big pool of money for the year. So the Tamata Tennis Club, the Blues Festival, and the Union Church all came in, and all...
No, it wasn't the Union one, the one on the roundabout?
Oh, the Anglican.
Anglican, yeah.
Sorry, my apologies. Came in requesting funding, and they were all... They all had their own validity because they were all quite different. So we gave $1,000 to each group, which I think was really great. And so we have decided that we will do funding rounds every second community board hui. So our next funding round will be in October, and the applications will close on the 2nd of October. But don't feel any pressure, because we will be getting comms out. Ross will be getting comms out to the community around the discretionary fund applications.
Okay, cool. I know the council is wanting to community boards to have community board plans.
And we're actually...
But you guys already kind of had one anyway. Can we talk about what might be on it, like what the board is thinking about for the future?
Well, we already, as you may be aware, you know, 3 terms ago, we already started on our 90-day planning, and we've still got that. So that's evolved over time, where we have oversight on different projects or what we want to do. And that really is our community plan for the community board. So myself, Dennis and Alison are going to meet with Dominique to look at the plan, because it's very generic. And it's what we discussed on Wednesday, is that the plans are great for community boards and community committees who perhaps never had a plan before.
Yeah.
Whereas we're quite advanced.
More proactive.
Yeah, in terms of what we have been able to do. But certainly the community board in the next year... because next year is an election year. So we are fast drawing to a close. We're over halfway through this term. So we're fast drawing to the end of our term. So we really want to look at what we can achieve in the next year and a bit. So we will meet with Dominique, as I mentioned, to discuss that further. And if the plan in its current form really fits Raglan, because we have our 90-day plan and so on. So, yeah, so we need to have that discussion to tweak it.
Okay. Are there specific things that are on your guys' minds at the moment?
We need to discuss that and really nut that out as a group.
Yeah. I know that something that's on a lot of people's minds is the Manu Bay breakwater.
Yeah.
I know we did talk with Dennis about this last week, but is that going to get resolved? Like, and that sounds like a cheeky question, but it's been going on for so long.
It has been going.
And it's been hard to get agreement from the various stakeholders.
because the stakeholders are quite different and their perspectives and needs are quite different. And so we need to be considered about that. And ultimately, any decision will come back to the decision of council, particularly if it involves and requires further funding.
And potentially $2 million, according to a staff estimate.
So looking at that, so we have to consider that and whether going into the long-term planning, which we will be going into very shortly, will have a significant impact, because you know that about $880,000 equates to 1% rise in a 1% increase in rates. So if we were to look at options for modifications, for example, it would come at a cost to the ratepayer. You know, so we have to consider that. So council will need a full report on what that is to make an informed decision. So, yes, it has been a long process, and it was exacerbated, obviously, by COVID. That's no excuse, but it has been a long time between the workshops, because workshop 3 was in 2022, and now we're in workshop 4, which happened over a week ago, and you know, so it's taken a long time to get to this point. So it's been a drawn out process and frustrating for all stakeholders who've been involved in that process.
So, what has someone gone away to do some tasks?
Yes, and it
now
will come back to infrastructure. So, we, yeah.
Oh, the infrastructure committee has to look at the options.
Yeah, to look at the options.
So, they've got the opinions of the various stakeholders.
Yes.
And then, so when does that – that's a subcommittee that will meet in sometime it was, in the next few weeks?
It was actually undertaken to come back in to the October infrastructure hui. So, yes, we have to be very mindful about the process and ensure that we're listening to all of the stakeholders.
Yeah, and so, but and these subcommittees, they pretty much consist of all the councillors, don't
they? They are.
Yeah, so every
they're a committee of council, so every councillor is actually on those infrastructure, sustainability and wellbeing, policy and regulatory.
So you'll need about 8 councillors to agree to spend the money.
Out
of the 14, yeah.
So, folks, that's the deal. There will be a lot of debate from councillors because we are very aware of affordability and other issues, and other councillors also have
they've got issues too that they
community's
passionate about.
So there's a lot to consider, but ultimately
they've probably got issues that their communities are not arguing about, that they're all in agreement about.
More than that, because
at some point there'll be
an announcement, so watch the space.
Yeah, the councillor is not all powerful in this situation.
No, I definitely am not all powerful.
You get ticked off.
I'm lucky if anyone listens to me.
Here's something I talked about with the mayor yesterday. I was talking about the high level of staff turnover that happens at councils in general, and our council particularly, because people can live in Hamilton and they work at about 4 or 5 different councils and swap around between them quite easily. So there's a lot of staff turnover, and I gave her an example of. I use the erosion issue on the side of Papahua and like that. I know there'll be that attitude, but I'm like, can we bring in someone who wants to do that?
To be true.
And I felt cheeky asking that.
From lots of staff, they do it because they love the communities that they are working in. Because if they were to go into the private sector, they would earn probably quite a considerable amount more than what they're getting
in
the public sector.
And I've heard that is becoming
sector.
An increasing problem. I've heard from people at other councils about that,
managers. You know, staff cop abuse, you even see it online.
Oh, I know,
Council, you're all a bunch of useless and you don't know what you're doing,
stupid.
All of that sort of
stuff. Stupid, but it's a reality.
And you know, so it's in many ways it's thankless, but in other ways I know that there are staff who really enjoy and love working out in the community. So, and I do see at Waikato District Council that there really cool stuff that happens. For example, at Matariki, there was a full Matariki kai where staff bought their signature dishes to share. They had a hangi, so, and it was all staff, so 400 plus, you know, being involved. And I know that even Leanne at the holiday park, they had some of the hangi brought over from there. They had staff that were over there brought back from Ngarewa Wahia here to the holiday park for the staff who weren't able to make it there. So, and they've got a great initiative called the Taki Taki program, which is the in-house leadership program that any staff, from the cleaning staff to the executive manager staff, can participate in it. And I actually saw two of our staff from Raglan in council yesterday, and they were there to catch up with their team and the Taki Taki program, and they love it. And there's opportunities and, for them to do other things outside of their normal role. So even with the holiday park staff, they're now working more with the wider staff at District Council in Ngarewa Wahia, where there are other opportunities for growth in their roles. So there are really cool things that are happening. But, you know, sometimes people are people and they may not like an environment and or they may have opportunity elsewhere. So it's a hard one, I think, to ensure that staff stay.
The mayor did say that she was working on something, I can't remember the wording, that just an attempt to make sure that their institutional knowledge wasn't lost, that projects that, that staff were working on got passed on to someone else.
Yeah, exactly. That
to do that better.
Intellectual knowledge and the you know, and the knowledge of the business itself and the relationships, because I think what it comes down to is if you've got a staff member who's built really great relationships, and I can think about Teresa, who used to be in the comms team, and she would work closely with us through the three P's and things like that, you know, and her husband got a job down in Christchurch, so they moved, so with her went a lot of relationships and things like that, you know, so it's about, it's not just, I guess, that knowledge around the role. It's also those relationships that people build with communities that are really important. And sometimes those are irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And that will be a challenge.
Yeah, it usually is. Now, I had something in my head that I was going to talk about, soccer fields. So the soccer club, before COVID, there were about 200 kids at the soccer club. This year they've got 290.
Oh, and it's fantastic. And I actually had a chat with Johnny, who's in the soccer club.
Oh, he's the chair, the president at the moment.
Okay, yep. Anyway, so we had a good chat. So I asked him to send an email to me with all of the push that 30 to 50 year planning around Wainui Reserve. So we need to really progress that. That's been on hold.
Because I used to do what Johnny did, and I had convinced, I think there was a coastal reserves submission process, and I convinced the councillors that yes, the down at Papahua that just was running out of space. Now there's an extra 90 kids, although the secondary school stuff's gone up to the school, but it's definitely
is the desire to have some sort of sports facility, indoor sports facility for basketball, for example. There's that desire to have an increased capacity for the soccer fields. There's, you know, see, there's a whole lot of things to consider. And
like, we're talking about the soccer because that's grown, but the rugby is still there, and there's new rugby league teams as well that the kids are playing.
Oh,
so there's growth in that and those other sports as well.
Yeah, so there's quite a few. So that's awesome. I think it's really great. And I was going around the
where are we?
Where we put, so through our waste fund that we, you know, started, which is awesome.
So the council gets money from the waste minimisation fund.
The waste minimisation fund, and I know that people think, oh, some people had said, what a waste of money, spend it on other things, but it actually comes from the waste minimisation fund, and it's a way of creating
a central government thing. I always wanted to let people know it's not from your rates; it's from central government.
Central government, and some of the initiatives that have come out of there are really fantastic. That, you know, we probably take them for granted because we have such a great community where we have the repair cafe, we've got the growers market, we have so many great things that happen in Whaingaroa, and so even Fire Tilly said the other day, Tilly Turner, who's our Māori ward councillor, said that, you know, Raglan is an exemplar community where other communities need to look at what we're doing and how we're successful.
Yeah, certainly around the waste issues, definitely.
Yeah, so just cool things. And Sarah from So Love doing initiative. Happened to listen to this, can you correct me? But
they'd done a report for council, the community board had seen
it. Yeah, and that's on the community.
So waiting for my understanding is they're waiting for council to go through a process, I think, of talking to stakeholders perhaps. Well, that's my memory of it. Was that discussed at the solid waste?
No, not yesterday. I'm just looking at my notes.
So checking your notes.
Basically
so
covered everything.
All right.
Right, so I think that's about it. But I just got a message from Ross Wallace, and he said, no, there was no one in the public forum. Applicants. So, and also the next community board hui will be at Tiuku. So watch the space. We'll be updating the community on that as well.
So that'll be in about 6 weeks.
Yep.
Approximately. All right, Lisa, thank you for coming in.
So if you have been, thanks for listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan. If you haven't, then you're probably waiting for the music to start, and let's see what we can do with that. You might manage to join me next week anyway, 6-ish till 7:30-ish here on Raglan Community Radio. You're around your final hour now being 31 minutes past 7. And we've got 39